In the chilly hours and minutes of uncertainty, I want to be in the warm hold of your loving mind, to feel you all around me and to take your hand along the sand. Ah, but I may as well try and catch the wind. When sundown pales the sky, I want to hide a while behind your smile. And everywhere I'd look, your eyes I'd find. For me to love you now would be the sweetest thing, would make me sing. Ah, but I may as well try and catch. When rain has hung the leaves with tears, I want you near to kill my fear, to help me to leave all my blues behind. For standing in your heart, it's where I want to be and long to be. Ah, but I may as well try and catch the wind. Ah, but I may as well. Well, I missed last week's show because I was listening to Donovan sing that song and many others, and it was a great concert. He opened the show with that song. He opened the second set with Universal Soldier, and that used to be our show's theme song, so I almost sang that tonight, but I decided, well, Catch the Wind's been going around in my head all day, so I decided to share it with you. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And it's listener-supported radio, so please head on over to freedomslips.com, throw them a little donation, and mention the New American Dream Radio Show when you do it. Very proud now to welcome my friend and co-host, who was kind enough to do the whole show last week, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Chuck, tonight we welcome special guests Larry Pinkney, Frank Cordero, Azura Crispino, M.K. Davis, and Phil Ferruggio. Phil Ferruggio is a writer and activist originally from Brooklyn, now in Port Orange, Florida. Phil does a weekly segment for us called It's the Empire Stupid. You can find his work in Cold Type Magazine, Information Clearinghouse, World News Trust, as well as many others. Azura Crispino is the co-chair of the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. She will speak to us about an historic international prisoner strike on September 9th, the 45th anniversary of the massacre at Attica State Prison in New York State. Larry Pinkney is a veteran of the Black Panther Party, the former Minister of Interior of the Republic of New Africa, a former political prisoner, and the only American to have successfully self-authored his civil political rights case to the United Nations under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Frank Cordero is a member of the Des Moines Catholic Worker. He's a former Catholic priest. He has spent over 6 years in county jail and federal prison for protests at Offutt Air Force Base, as well as other U.S. military installations. If you recall the Patterson-Gimlin film from the 1960s, it's the Zapruder film of the Bigfoot world. You might have seen it on TV. It shows a Bigfoot walking across a sandbar on Bluff Creek, a tributary of the Klamath River, about 25 miles northwest of Orleans, Humboldt County in Northern California, on October 20th, 1962. There is still debate about whether that film is a real Sasquatch, but we are actually way past that. Of course it is. But this needs to be added. Because of the work of M.K. Davis, we not only can be sure that was a real Sasquatch, but now we have an alternate story of that day in Willow Creek. Davis says that as many as 5 Sasquatch were killed at that time by mercenaries for logging companies. And so tonight we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in northern Minnesota, in Port Orange, Florida, in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Des Moines, Iowa, Benton, Mississippi, in Austin, Texas, in Minneapolis, and wherever you are. This should be read before every CNN, Fox, NPR, ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS broadcast. We're an empire now, and when we act, we create our own reality. And while you're studying that reality, judiciously as you will, we'll act again, creating other new realities which you can study too. And that's how things will sort out. We're history's actors, and you, all of you, will be left to just study what we do. Karl Rove, Operation Gladio, Operation Northwoods, 9/11, Boston, Sandy Hook, Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, Dallas, San Bernardino, etc., etc., etc. About a month after I was elected governor, not me, I was requested into the basement of the Capitol to be interviewed by 23 members of the Central Intelligence Agency. They put me in a chair, and they were in a big half moon around me. You know what the most bizarre thing about it was? There was every array of people you could imagine, young people, old people, all nationalities. That's what really got to me. These were people you would see every day. They look like your neighbors. Jesse Ventura, welcome to Sugar Creek. We already know you're here. Welcome to Sugar Creek by CWG Press is my latest novel. It's now available at createspace.com, also Amazon. My recommended for this week, Jill Stein. Do a Google search and read about her recent campaign stops in Iowa and in Maine. And this, if true, would be the most important report you have read all year. JamesFetzer.blogspot.com. Will the real Hillary Clinton please stand up? By Jim Fetzer. This morning I sent a letter to the editor to the Wisconsin State Journal about the body double in New York as follows. But the letter had hardly had time to arrive when a third version of Hillary showed up on the plane to Greensboro, North Carolina. Read the rest at jamesfetzer.blogspot.com.
Wait a minute. Wait. Wait for it. This just in. The Democratic National Committee has just announced that Colin Kaepernick will take the place of Hillary Clinton as the party's nominee. We realize we've been wrong for 50 years, says the DNC press release. We will no longer stand during the national anthem at any of our events as it represents war and oppression around the world. We've been so wrong, we are dirty, so bad, so wrong. We're sorry, so sorry. Please forgive us, etc., etc. To read the rest of the sorry press release, go to democraticnationalcommittee.sesamestreet.com. Now we bring you the George Carlin Target and Walmart Back to School special sale on folders and pencils and lunch boxes and backpacks. Tell your children's teachers and principals and school board what you really think about them and their little school and little classroom with these special messages on the pencils and folders and lunchboxes and backpacks. They'll be around your school and playground and house all year long. Some sample selections from the George Carlin Target Walmart Back to School Special. Get a pack of 100 number 2 pencils with this special little message that your child can see every time she tries to calculate 2 plus 2. There's a reason that education sucks. It's never going to be fixed. There's nothing you can do about it. The owners of this country don't want that. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. Well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking, they're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. The new backpack with this message for everyone on the bus. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting effed by a system that threw them overboard 30 freaking years ago. They don't want that. Take home 20 multicolored notebooks and folders to hold all your child's important papers with this familiar old American saying. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. people were just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. They own this freaking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. The ballparks and swimming pools are closing. The ice cream and popsicles are melting. Yes, it's that time again. Time for the George Carlin Target and Walmart Back to School Special Sale.
Our first guest of the evening is M.K. Davis. M.K. Davis, as we said, is a Bigfoot expert, a Bigfoot researcher. He specializes in enhancing and researching film. He comes to us each month from Benton, Mississippi, and we're pleased and proud to be able to listen and present M.K. Davis. And Chuck will be getting M.K. on the phone right about now.
Well, hello, M.K. Welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Well, good. I've got something pretty interesting tonight. It's kind of complicated, actually. It's got to do with a couple of mysteries that at some point might intersect. I was reading a book on the lost colony of Roanoke, the very first attempt at colonization by the English in the Americas, and that colony disappeared. I don't want to get into too much about what the book said, but it was some real interesting stuff. The author actually went and looked at the personal journals of a lot of the people involved in three different Roanoke expeditions. There were two prior to the attempt at colonization. And then also the Jamestown colony later on in 1607. He looked at their personal journals, and it turns out that the story was heavily sanitized. It was quite a bit that they wrote in their journals. They said they disappeared without a trace, but according to the gentleman who did this research, actually it's a lady, not a gentleman, there were signs of them. They were sightings of them, the Indians, and then there were things left behind. But what caught my attention was that there was and the gist of the story was that there was a tribe of people that they considered to be terrible. That was the word that the Indians used, were terrible. And they called them Wintooks or Mandogs, not dogs, D-O-A-G. And these people did nothing for a living but trade in copper and human misery. And they would go to the copper mines, both to the north and to the south, which I wasn't aware there were copper mines in the south, but there were copper mines to the south down into the Georgia, that was producing very fine copper with a lot of silver in it. These people would in the fall, would raid the Sakotan villages and Powhatan, and there was a whole host of individual smaller tribes. They would raid them and take hostages or people and take them and trade them to the copper mines. They didn't really know who was, it never says who was running the copper mines. The people who went down to look for the lost colony found this out. But they were not allowed on this road. They had a road that they said looked like a highway that went all the way from this island called Oconee or something like that. I have a hard time with those Indian words. But it went all the way from there, all the way down into Georgia, and it stopped just short of where Augusta is now. And this, there was so much trade going on of copper in and out of there that it had worn it into a like a highway. It was, you know, a very defined road. But on that island were a tribe of Indians whose only job was to monitor the traffic on that road. And they would not allow anybody on there that didn't have authority to be on there. And so Mamendo would take the hostages from the Jamestown, Roanoke area and in the fall and would march them down that road and trade them at the copper mines as slaves. Now, this became very interesting to me because that's where the Dare stones were found. There was a series of 38 stones that were found with messages chiseled into them by Eleanor Dare. And there was a show on America Unearthed where Scott Walter, a geologist, a forensic geologist, looked at the stones, and he says, as far as he was concerned, they were authentic. They had the wear necessary, the weathering in the letter, in the edges of them, and then the pits of the lettering, to authenticate them. Well, when I read this, it made a little more sense that they would be down that way because that's the way that road went. And Eleanor had said that she had lost her husband and her child, and she was in misery. They were marching her down that way, probably to work her to death. But the Mandogues were also called Wintooks, and when I looked it up in the bibliography, Wintook was another name for Wendigo. Wendigo is a name for Bigfoot. Wendigo is a name that Bigfoot is called up in the upper Michigan, Minnesota areas, up in that area along the Canadian border. And that's where the copper mines are. So it starts to make a little sense that the man dog would be called, you know, a Wendigo because of their terribleness. Wendigo to the native people was a multifaceted word that it was. A physical thing, like a Bigfoot, or it could be a spiritual thing that you and I could possess the spirit of a Wendigo. The spirit of a Wendigo was greed and bloodthirstiness. As a matter of fact, the Indians considered the English to be filled with the spirit of the Wendigo. But the Wendigo actually also was something real. It was something authentic, and you could put your hand on it. You know, it was physical. And that was in the form of the Mandogues. The English tried to war with the Mandogues. The Mandogues followed them in their boats. And the English waited till the right time and beat the boat and ran at them, charged them, and there was no one there. He said they just disappeared. And they saw their fires one night, and their Indian guide said, that's the Mandogues. So they decided to attack them, and they rushed them. And when they got to where they had seen the fires, there was nothing there. It wasn't even any ashes. So the English began to have a little, you know, attribute spiritual things to the Mandogue as well. But the Mandogue definitely were real, because they would come in the fall and take human hostages down to the copper mines. And I looked up copper mines. I said, I'm going to follow the copper and see what I can find. And when I Googled it and kept following links, I came up with this weird skull that had been found on Copper Island just above Lake Michigan over on the Canadian side. And this skull had an elongated skull way back, but it had the features of the skull. It had huge eye sockets. And the nose hole went all the way down to the top of the teeth. It had a gigantic opening for the nasal passage. And they found that along with the copper mines there on Copper Island. And all they did was label it as a non-Aboriginal skull. They didn't really know what it was. But it fits the description of the Mandog. And the Mandog, could the Mandog be Bigfoot? Could the Mandog be Wendigo? The Mandog were definitely Wendigo. Whether they were physically or not, they had the spirit of the Wendigo. They were bloodthirsty and greedy. As a matter of fact, a lot of the Algonquin tribes now even consider our entire nation, the United States, to have the spirit of the Wendigo. So, you know, it goes back to Bigfoot and what a Bigfoot is. You know, how can something that does not exist be so all-pervading and deeply embedded in the psyche of people all across the part of the country? I was very, very surprised to find that Wendigo was being used on the East Coast. And I was very surprised to find that there was a huge, gigantic road trading called the Great Trade Road that went all the way down to just shy of where Augusta, Georgia is now. And it existed at the time the first Europeans came into this country. Already there, already worn down. So, if you walk that road, you might have to watch for the Wendigo or the spirit of the Wendigo. Either one can kill you. That was the point, I think, that the book made, and the Indians, their beliefs were that the spirit of the Indigo could infect any group of people. And once they get it, they're dangerous, and they'll kill you. And if they were inferring to the British, the English, when they first came there, according to those private notes, the second expedition, Lane's expedition, got Secotan children, threw them into Chesapeake Bay, and when they surfaced, shot them in the head. Now, that didn't make it back to England, not in any kind of official way, but it was in the personal journals of these people. So if that's what a Wendigo does, then that's a Wendigo. Mandog is a Wendigo. English, Wendigo. Anybody can be a Wendigo. But only the Mandogs could have actually been a physical, horrible, terrible, you know, Bigfoot-like thing. That remains to be seen, but it's a very interesting story, and I'm planning to try to do some further research on that. Am I getting close?
Well, yeah, you're pretty close. We probably got less than a minute left.
Okay. Well, I don't have anything in print on this, but the name of the book is Solving the Mystery of the Lost Colony of Roanoke by Lee Miller. And Lee Miller is a lady, not a man. And she walked the walk. She went over there and opened up these journals and found out this information.
I'll tell you, it's really quite fascinating, the idea that the spirit of the Wendigos has infected the Americans. But
yeah, right. That's the way a lot of the Native peoples view it even today. And what's not discussed is the cure.
Well, thank you for another very interesting segment, and we'll talk to you again next month.
All right, I enjoyed it.
Bluesslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Earth, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Enjoy your
extra big-ass fries.
You didn't give me no fries. I got an empty box.
Would you like another
extra big-ass fries?
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please
what?
Come back when you can afford
oh,
to make
no,
a purchase.
No, no!
I'm sorry you're
come
having
on.
Trouble.
My kids are starving.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we believe in freedom of ideas, freedom of speech, but above all, we believe in freedom of existence through self-reliance. This station is 100% listener-supported, and as a fundraising promotion, I have a kick-ass free gift for a $100 donation. 35,000 seeds. 25 years in the freezer, long-term storable, 54 different varieties. So if food prices go crazy, the shit hits the fan, or you just want to save tons of money every year by creating your own food like I do, grab our seed pack special. Just look for the banner on the homepage at freedomslips.com. Don't be a statistic. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. We need, as humans, to start taking care of ourselves and not depending on the megacorps to provide unhealthy, nasty food. Included in this package is also a DVD with 900 survival and off-grid living documents on the offline home canning how to do everything website, all on the DVD. So when you're growing all that food, you know how to can it, store it, preserve it, etc. with all these documents. So thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I hope that you will pick up this package and start learning to be free. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps and freedom is one seed that needs to be planted.
What we do in life, it goes in eternity.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
And now, from the actual American History Channel, tonight we will hear an excerpt from the book Disturbing the Peace, sponsored by Powder Milk Democrat Gonads. Heavens, they're pasty. Voice for the Voiceless. Fort Benning, Georgia, August 9, 1983. The summer sun was finally setting. It was time to act. Time to engage the Salvadoran troops. As night fell, the three set out. Father Roy Bourgeois, Father Larry Rosebaugh, Linda Ventimiglia, dressed as high-ranking officers with insignia also purchased at the Army surplus store. They loaded their equipment in the Land Rover of a friend who'd agreed to drive them to the base. The driver eased onto the base, passing several warning signs that said they were entering a restricted area. Unauthorized persons would be prosecuted. Vehicle stopped near a tank trail in the woods. There, the three quickly gathered their equipment and began walking down the trail that led to the quarters of several hundred Salvadorans. Soon, the lights of the barracks became visible. Three edged closer, looking for a suitable tree. After they agreed on a towering 100-foot pine, Rosebaugh sprinkled pepper on the ground to prevent guard dogs from picking up their scent. Bourgeois, meanwhile, strapped the tree climbers to his boots and began scaling the pine. It was around 9:30 p.m. and quite dark. Ventimiglia and Rosebaugh slowly climbed up and then tossed the rope ladder to the ground. Bourgeois anchored the tape player high in the tree, aiming at the barracks. Then there was a collective sigh of relief. They'd gotten into the belly of the beast. Bourgeois, a Marinol priest, silently prayed that no one would get shot and reminded himself of the reasons they were taking such risks. The U.S. military was training a brutal foreign army on U.S. soil. An army that served a small Salvadoran elite who lived in splendor while the poor lived in squalor. Army that had butchered thousands of innocent people, including women and children, priests and nuns. An army that had raped and murdered two of his friends. Juan knew firsthand what the training meant. Naval officer, he'd been taught to fire an M-16 and had later encountered hundreds of Vietnamese children maimed by U.S. weapons. As a missionary in Bolivia, he'd seen another U.S.-trained army commit abuses. Weight in the tree felt interminable. The three kept shifting their weight to get comfortable. Suddenly, the barracks lights went out. Finally, moment re-steeled themselves as Bourgeois reached up and pressed the play button on the tape player, saying, "Oscar, this is for you." Later, the voice of the dead Salvadoran Archbishop Oscar Romero boomed in Spanish from the treetops, shattering the silence below. "I would like to make a special appeal to the members of the Army and specifically to the ranks of the National Guard, the police, and the military. Brothers, each one of you is one of us. We are the same people. The peasants you kill are your own brothers and sisters. When you hear the voice of a man commanding you to kill, remember the voice of God. Thou shalt not kill." It was the Archbishop's last Sunday homily, delivered in the San Salvador Cathedral on March 23, 1980. His fateful words had stung the Salvadoran military and led to his assassination the next day. Romero's words again triggered a violent reaction as they echoed through the barracks at Fort Benning, imploring the startled Salvadorans to disobey orders to kill. It was as if someone had poked a beehive. The base was abuzz. Lights beamed, sirens wailed, MPs with M16s swarmed over the ground. But in the darkness, they had trouble locating the source of the disturbance. Even with the aid of the dogs, it was a sacred moment, Bourgeois later recalled. Those soldiers coming out of the barracks, looking into the sky, not being able to see us, hearing the words of this prophet. Finally, one of the lights fixed on the rope ladder at the base of the pine and then illuminated the trespassers up the tree. The MPs started cursing and threatening to shoot them down, but even with weapons trained on him, Bourgeois stalled for time, hoping to play the entire homily. Scouted down that they no longer had the rope ladder, and as the MPs scurried about trying to figure out what to do, the tape played over and over. No soldier is obliged to obey an order contrary to the law of God. There's still time for you to obey your own conscience, even in the face of a sinful command to kill. In the name of God, in the name of our tormented people whose cries rise up to heaven, I beseech you, I beg you, I command you, stop the repression. The tree climbing had shone a light on the U.S. Army's infamous School of the Americas. And as Bourgeois would learn years later, the school had in fact trained the Salvadoran officers who murdered the U.S. churchwomen and ordered the assassination of Archbishop Romero. This has been your actual American History Channel, an excerpt from the book Disturbing the Peace, sponsored by Powder Milk Democrat Gonads. Heavens, they're pasty.
Our next guest of the evening is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero speaks to us each week from Des Moines, Iowa. He's the founder and a member of the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Frank is a former Catholic priest, and he has spent many years in prison protesting the U.S. military, and Frank will be speaking to us right about now.
Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank. How are you?
Well, I am currently sitting here in a chair, looking at the Mississippi towards the end of a day here on our. Jess, how many days we've been vigilant?
Like 2 weeks.
Close to 2 weeks. Anticipating a. Time out. We got a kid here who's from high school doing a video thing, and I'm talking to a guy on a radio show. Yeah. So, I'm dragging myself away, man. It's been quite a week. Saturday, we had a march and rally of about 150 people who showed up. We announced that we are going to have a full-scale civil disobedience, nonviolent direct action campaign to shut down the this site and told people to come back next week, which would be this coming Saturday, the 17th. And we're anticipating, you know, a couple hundred people, maybe 50 people get arrested. And we're thinking this is going to be a sustained campaign. So once we do this on Saturday, we're going to keep our encampment here at the entrance and invite people to come from all over the country to do this kind of activism to stop this pipeline from the Mississippi, and we'll just take it all the way up to North Dakota. This really is the time to do it. These Dakota Pipeline people are here in Iowa in the hundreds. They have hundreds of these rigs just going through the land like hot knife with butter, and it's hurting people just viscerally. People who are close to it, who are seeing the land destroyed, and this pipe being put into it. To have great, it was a great angst that, of course, no one had, because no one saw it coming, no matter how you say it. And it is catching with some people, and hopefully, what the natives are doing in North Dakota, God bless them. I mean, God, a race that really should be put to rest and say, hey, you really deserve to have an honored place. We still treat them like shit, and they're getting out in solidarity and not to fight for their own rights, which, God, they should. And we should, try to do something about what we've done to them. But no, they're talking about the water. They're the keepers of the land, and they're just saying, you all are screwing the water, and this is our place as white folks to put a stand with them, because they're right. So I'm very excited, but still very much tenuous as to where we're at in this campaign. We're in the very early stages. I've been talking a lot. Does any of this make any sense?
Well, it sure does, Frank. I mean, first of all, that being on the Mississippi at sunset sounds like it's pretty a beautiful view.
Indeed it is.
And I couldn't agree with you more about the Native Americans protesting. That is just a fantastic thing, and I'm really glad to hear what you're doing on your end. Another sometime guest on our show, Rivera Sun, was commenting recently about how there seems to be a growth in actively protesting, but nonviolently. What do you think about that?
Well, it just, again, lessons come from the peripheral. I mean, the people in the Middle East, the whole Arab sunshine, Arab Spring. We're still dealing with very violent scenes in the world, but people from the bottom up are seeing the shortcomings of violent revolution. And from all over the place, nonviolence is being exercised. And here in the States, it's puny. It's pathetic. I mean, we're really the most violent people in the whole damn world. So we have to begin with these baby steps. I really do think that where we're at here at this pipeline, I've been doing this for 40 years, rarely does the tactic of civil disobedience, nonviolent civil disobedience, have a chance to be so effective immediately in shutting this thing down. I have rarely been involved in campaigns that this is something that's really a possibility. And it all that matters is getting several hundred people's lives disturbed enough to spend time either supporting folks or going to jail or going to courts on a full press kind of situation for the next couple months. We could stop this thing. I really believe that.
Well, keep up the good fight, and I know you will. And it sounds like you have a lot going on there. So, and our time's up anyway. So we better
wait
till next
God
week.
God bless.
Thank you.
God
so
bless,
much.
Brother.
God bless.
All right. Bye bye. Bye bye.
Our next guest of the evening is Azura Crispino. Azura Crispino is the media co-chair of the Incarcerated Workers Organized Committee, co-founder of the Prison Abolition Prison Solidarity, and an associate professor of philosophy at Austin Community College. She's going to speak to us tonight about a historic international prisoner strike that occurred on September 9th, the 45th anniversary of the massacre at Attica State Prison in New York State.
Hello.
Well, hello, Azura, and welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. You're on the air. We're running a little late, so just go for it.
Okay. Well, in the spirit of Anthony, I thought I would start by reading an excerpt from a letter from one of the prisoners that I support, a Chicano anarchist named Shinocle Alvaro Luna Hernandez, talking about why the anniversary of Attica. Upon learning of the assassination of the prison revolutionary George L. Jackson on August 21st, 1971, by San Quentin prison pigs Attica prisoners wore black armbands to honor and grieve the tragic loss of one of its most beloved teacher and freedom fighter, Comrade George, at the murderous hands of fascist pigs who hounded, brutalized, and tortured Jackson for many years in solitary confinement at San Quentin's Adjustment Center for standing up for human rights of all prisoners in California's prisons. Comrade George was an inspiration to many of us brutalized in America's houses of pain and was a leader of the prison movement calling on all prisoners to unite, resist the repression, and advocating for revolution of the oppressed masses to dismantle capitalism and imperialism in the United States and internationally. Even before Jackson's assassination, tensions in Attica were running high. Massive overcrowded prison conditions, lack of adequate medical health care, institutionalized racism against prisoners of color who disproportionately represent the U.S. prison population, inadequate food, unsanitary, filthy living conditions, prison guard violence, and brutalities against prisoners, among other atrocities, ran rampant at Attica, as is common then and today, inside U.S. prisons from New York to Texas to California. An incident of a brutal beating of a prisoner by prison guards triggered an act of prisoner unity and resistance of oppressed prisoners rising up in armed resistance against the carceral state that will forever live in the annals of the U.S. prison movement history, leaving an ugly stain in the American soul of the cruelty and the viciousness of those who hold political power and rule over the rest of us and the crimes they will commit to hold to their class privileges as administrators of the capitalist state. Attica reverberated in every prison cell block in America's prisons, in oppressed communities, and around the world. In a showing of prisoner racial solidarity and resistance to state crime, black, brown, red, and white prisoners armed themselves and took over parts of the prison, taking five guards hostages. The prisoners assembled in the prison yard. There they held political discussions of their social and prison conditions and drafted a list of demands, demanding respect of their human dignity and human rights. Their demands not only dealt with humane prison conditions, but also reflected the prisoners' internationalist political social consciousness demands that transcended reforms of prison conditions, calling for an end to unjust imperialist wars, to U.S. imperialist hands off Cuba, and in defense of the rights of oppressed nations and communities to self-determination. The prisoners asked that renowned movement attorney William Kunstler act as their spokesperson in the ensuing negotiations with the state. Negotiations were intense and continued for many days. The prisoners and their prison guard hostages in control of the prison yard, calling it their liberated zone. Negotiations broke down. On September 13, 1971, New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller and U.S. President Richard Nixon, who had been at the head of the negotiations between prisoners and the state, ordered a military-style assault on the prison yard. Special operations soldiers, armed to the teeth, dropped into the yard from helicopters and began opening fire indiscriminately against all prisoners in the yard and their prison guard hostages. There were 18 prisoners murdered, as well as five guards mowed down by machine gun fire. The military soldiers ordered all prisoners face down on the ground, ripped their clothes off, and formed a gauntlet of soldiers armed with riot sticks, clubs, and other weapons. They made the naked prisoners run the gauntlet, sadistically striking them, causing severe injuries to the remaining prisoners in the yard. Long live the memory of the Attica Prison Rebellion. Long live the Attica Prison Uprising Martyrs. Support the National Prisoners Movement for Human Rights. Abolish all capitalist for-profit prisons. Dismantle wage theft slavery under capitalism. All power to the people, to the oppressed. Hasta la victoria siempre. Viva la revolución proletaria. Venceremos. That was from Chinookli, which means germinating seed in Nahuatl, also known as Alvaro Luna Hernandez. And if you would like to write to him, please go to freealvaro.net for information on how to do so. So some of you may be wondering, what is it that prisoners want? The first common theme, and it should be mentioned that demands vary from unit to unit, from state to state, and even from prisoner to prisoner. But a common theme is to abolish the 13th Amendment. The 13th Amendment, many of us believed, abolished slavery, but it didn't. It made it be the case that slavery could still be legal for someone who had been convicted of a crime. So prisoners are asking for a minimum wage for their work, or an industry standard wage, not just so that they can have more money, but also to make the prison industrial complex no longer economically viable. In the words of Malik Washington, also in a Texas prison, what scares TDCJ about this movement is not the violence. It is the prospect of two things. One, the threat of losing money from having to stop or slow operations of the numerous Texas correctional industry factories, which generate millions of dollars. And two, being exposed in the mainstream media as an agency which exploits, oppresses, and amuses and abuses human beings in their care. So in Texas, prisoners are asking for good time and work time credits, which actually reduce prison terms. So, for example, Comrade Malik has already served 100% of his sentence if his good time, the work that he has done, were to be credited. But on his fifth round to the parole board, he was once again denied. An oversight committee for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, right to an attorney on all habeas filings, abolishing the $100 medical copay system. Prisoners in Texas have to pay $100 in order to see a doctor. And I would add hepatitis C treatment for all prisoners in the United States, and humane living conditions and treatment, including an end to long-term solitary confinement and administrative segregation. So in Alabama, prisoners have drafted what is called a freedom bill, which would dismantle the prison industrial complex in Alabama.
Azura, that's the signal that we are out of time, but this was a fascinating segment, and I hope that we'll be able to have you back on the show to talk to us some more.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Enjoy your
extra big ass fries.
You didn't give me no fries. I got an empty box.
Would you like another
extra big ass fries?
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please
what?
Come back when you can afford to make
a
purchase.
No.
I'm sorry you're
come
having
on.
Trouble.
My
I'm
kids
sorry
are starving.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we believe in freedom of ideas, freedom of speech, but above all, we believe in freedom of existence through self-reliance. This station is 100% listener-supported, and as a fundraising promotion, I have a kick-ass free gift for a $100 donation. 35,000 seeds. 25 years in the freezer. Long-term storable, 54 different varieties. So if food prices go crazy, the shit hits the fan, or you just want to save tons of money every year by creating your own food like I do, grab our seed pack special. Just look for the banner on the homepage at freedomslips.com. Don't be a statistic. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. We need, as humans, to start taking care of ourselves and not depending on the megacorps to provide unhealthy, nasty food. Included in this package is also a DVD with 900 survival and off-grid living documents on the offline home canning how to do everything website, all on the DVD. So when you're growing all that food, you know how to can it, store it, preserve it, etc. with all these documents. So thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I hope that you will pick up this package and start learning to be free. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps and freedom is one seed that needs to be planted.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch The Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's The Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. Can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right! You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now, from Port Orange, Florida, with stops at World News Trust and Nation of Change and many other sites, here's Phil Ferrugio with It's the Umpire, Stupid.
Good evening, working stiffs. This is pretty appropriate since we had September 11th. It's called 9/12, The Need for Truth. You know, on this past Sunday, our nation once again was in mourning, and that's okay for the victims of September 11th, 2001. They brought out the honor guards and the flags were prominent, and what will once again be missing is a voice of truth of what really transpired that fateful morning. Now, you all remember that terrible day. Junior Bush should. He sat there in an elementary school classroom like a dope for some time, after knowing that not one but two planes crashed into the towers. His handlers, and more importantly the Secret Service, seemed to not think he was in imminent danger, even though his itinerary was publicized well in advance. Well, enough of that one mere bit of evidence within a litany of facts about what did not happen that morning in September, that a bunch of Islamic fanatics carried out the suicide mission against our nation by all by their lonesome, if not at all. This writer was introduced to the, quote, Oswald did not act alone or at all theories and facts about November 22nd, 1963. I got that through a Playboy interview with Jim Garrison in October of 1967. As a teenager who to that point only cared about sports and girls, not necessarily in that order, I was shocked into becoming a newly ordained conspiracy theorist, and that continues my whole adult life. Thus, when 9/11 occurred, at first I was both numb and dumb to any sort of heinous conspiracy. Thank goodness for the independent and alternative media, which investigated the cracks in the government version of things that day. Now, over the years, many researchers, too many to note here, have done the grunt work and put out books and reports on 9/11 truth. Books like Mounting Evidence by Paul Ray, Ph.D., 9/11, The New Pearl Harbor by David Ray Griffin, The 9/11 Toronto Report by James Gourley, The Journal on 9/11 Studies by Kevin Ryan. These are just a few to touch the iceberg, the tip of the iceberg. When the obviously tainted 9/11 Commission published their findings, if one can call them that, one of the commission counsels, a Democrat it turns out, was being interviewed on C-SPAN by the, quote, fair and balanced Brian Lamb, who himself once worked for the Nixon White House. This writer actually got on the air with a question. I asked the guest how it was possible that Washington, D.C., the most heavily guarded city in the world, with missile batteries and Andrews Air Force Base right there, could allow that plane, those at 9/11 Truth know it was not the plane that they said it was, how that so-called plane could have reached the Pentagon. Lamb jumped in and asked if I was Vice President Cheney and had the power, would I have had the jets take down that plane in midair? I told him that knowing that the plane was not responding to radio contact continually, and knowing that two other planes had just done the deed in New York City, as the one in power, I would have had no choice but to make the unfortunate order to shoot it down. Somewhere in the midst of that answer, he cut me off, so no one heard my response. Now, the link to the 9/11 Truth Conspiracy Movement is the 1997 Project for the New American Century, a think tank and then report influenced by its two founders, William Kristol and Robert Kagan, better known by the label neocons. Now, Kagan, interestingly enough, is the husband of Victoria Nuland, Obama and Miss Killery's Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs. Many believe that she will be Miss Killery's Secretary of State if elected, and Clinton most likely will be elected. The neocons support her. Newland is the warhawk who was front and center in goading the Ukrainian neo-Nazi movement to oust their Russian-leaning leader a few years ago. She succeeded. She also wants to see us take a more proactive role in ousting Assad in Syria. Anyway, getting back to her neocon husband, Bob, he and his crew of warhawks like Junior Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Wolfowitz, to name but a few, were the guys involved in PNAC in 1997. The same crew who instigated the worst action our nation has taken in perhaps a century, which is the illegal and immoral invasion and occupation of Iraq. As anyone with half a brain will realize, if not for 9/11, no invasion of Iraq, period. This is why the 9/11 truth movement is so vital to having us finally pull back this empire and reinstate it as a democratic republic. True progressives and true conservatives need to stand together on this matter before the greedy and evil ones totally implode our nation and this whole planet. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. And Azura asked me to read this to the folks, and she wasn't able to get it out during her segment. She says you can get involved by going to supportprisonerresistance.net and writing to prisoners who are being repressed. Joining the IWOC phone zap to put pressure on prison officials who are oppressing striking prisoners, boycotting companies that use prison laborers, or staging a protest at their stores. Get your local union to endorse the strike or donate. Check out itsgoingdown.org for a list of all current and past actions on the strike, as well as IWOC.noblogs.org. Go ahead, Mike.
During those 33 years, Jesus planted a doctrine which, without a doubt, is revolutionary, without a doubt. One must read the real Jesus, not the Jesus of the oligarchy or the Jesus of the elite. The real Jesus, the one who was born there among the poor, who was a poor boy, who grew up among the poor, who stood up to the Roman imperialism of those times, who stood up to the religious elite of those times, who went around encouraging people to love one another. As long as you fight, nobody know how the fight going to come out. There's a possibility I might win, but I know if I stop, I cannot win. One man can make a difference if he's sincere. He was smiling, that's right. You know that Luke smile of his. He had it on his face right to the very end. Hell, if they didn't know it for, they could tell right then they weren't going to beat him. That old Luke smile. Old Luke, he was some boy. Cool Hand Luke, he's a natural-born world shaker. Now for your local Earth news. This is Chuck Gregory and Mike Polacek with a review of today's news from the eye of the hurricane and the eye of the blizzard.
This evening, it was in, this is upcoming Jill Stein events. This evening, she was in Madison, Wisconsin at the Dobin Restaurant, 5 p.m. to 6:30, and at 7 p.m., also in Madison, at the Barrymore Theater. Tomorrow, Friday the 16th, presidential candidate Jill Stein will be in Newark at 10:30 a.m. at the George Wilson Community Center. Also on Friday in Baltimore, 6:30 p.m., an event at the Downtown Cultural Arts Center. More upcoming Jill Stein events. Saturday, September 17, Red Bank, New Jersey, 10 a.m. Saturday in New Brunswick, 6 p.m. at the Rutgers Student Center. Sunday, September 18, Norton, Massachusetts, 2 p.m. at the Hindle Auditorium Science Center. And also on Sunday, 7 p.m., First Church of Northampton in Northampton, Massachusetts. Wednesday, September 21, State College, Pennsylvania, Old Main Lawn, 11:30 a.m. Also on Wednesday, Wilkes University, 7 p.m., Student Union Ballroom. Thursday, September 22, New Britain, Connecticut, Central Connecticut State University in New Britain, 1 p.m. Friday, September 23, 1 p.m., Rhode Island College in Providence.
Judith Vary Baker will host the 4th Annual JFK Assassination Conference in Dallas, Texas, November 18, 1920. Speakers Beverly Oliver, Jim Mars, Abraham Bolden, St. John Hunt, John Barber, Jim Fetzer, Ole Damegaard, Roger Stone, Vince Palomar, Wayne Madsen. For more information, www.jfkconference.com.
And this from Paul Craig Roberts and Information Clearinghouse. In an interview with John Micklethwaite of Bloomberg Businessweek, Putin was asked about Russia's desire to expand its influence geographically. Putin answered as follows, "I think all sober-minded people who really are involved in politics understand that the idea of a Russian threat to, for example, the Baltics, is complete madness. Are we really about to fight NATO? How many people live in NATO? About 600 million, correct? There are 146 million in Russia. Yes, we're the biggest nuclear power. But do you really think that we're about to conquer the Baltics using nuclear weapons? What is this madness?" That's the first point, but by no means the main point. The main point is something completely different. "We have a very rich political experience, which consists of our being deeply convinced that you cannot do anything against the will of the people. Nothing against the will of the people can be done. And some of our partners don't appear to understand this. When they remember Crimea, they try not to notice that the will of the people living in Crimea, where 70% of them are ethnic Russians and the rest speak Russian as if it's their native language, was to join Russia. Those in the West simply try not to see this. In one place, Kosovo, the West invoked the will of the people, but not in Crimea. This is all a political game. So, to give reassurances, I can say that Russia has pursued and plans to pursue an absolutely peaceful foreign policy directed toward cooperation. As far as expanding our zone of influence is concerned, it took me 9 hours to fly to Vladivostok from Moscow. This is about the same from Moscow to New York, through all of Eastern and Western Europe and the Atlantic Ocean. Do you think we need to expand something?"
That's all, folks. That's the news, and we are out of here. Good night and good luck. And so it goes. That's the way it is. Stay on the same page. Step up to the plate. Good to go. Take it to the next level. At the end of the day, bring something to the table. Have a good day. It is what it is. It's time to wake up. Your toast is ready. The bus is here. The world is on fire. Our next guest of the evening is Larry Pinkney. Larry Pinkney is a former member of the Black Panther Party. He was a political prisoner in the 1960s. He comes to us each month from Minneapolis, Minnesota. He's also a writer and a radio show host, and Chuck will be getting Larry Pinkney on the phone right about now.
Good evening, Larry Pinkney speaking.
Well, hello, Larry. It's Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Right on. Well, first of all, I'd certainly like to thank my brothers and sisters, and most especially Mike and all the brothers and sisters, quite frankly, who make this program possible. And I want to talk very briefly this evening, on the 15th of September 2016, about something. I call it Let's Not Be Confused. Again, I call it Let's Not Be Confused. We in this country, in the United States, are in a so-called election season. But we must understand, really, all of us, sisters and brothers, we must understand that this is really about the continuation of a very corrupt, filthy, disgusting, unequal, unfair, and unjust system. Now, having said that, I think that all of us need to concentrate wherever we may be, East Coast, West Coast, North, South, Middle, Midwest, wherever we may be, in geographically inside the United States, we need to be asking ourselves, what can we do on the local level? Not only what can we do, what will we do on the local level? I'm talking about things like city councils, block by block, okay? I'm talking about what we can say via our messages, public messages, that is, to the U.S. government, and that is, no more. We will not accept being pimped, used, and having hundreds of thousands of people killed in our names. No more. So we do that not by trying to go to ABC, NBC, PBS, or any of the, you know, Fox News, or any of the rest of these crooked vomit stream media. What we do is we go to ourselves and we say, how can we get this message out ourselves, over the internet, person to person, etc., etc. So I'm hoping that all those listening this evening to the show will go, maybe I can be a part of this. And I want to say to all of you right now, you're absolutely right. You are an integral part of this. So in the so-called election year, let us fool them by actually getting out there and taking local control of our communities all over this nation called the United States of America. Now, I think I've got maybe a few minutes left, so I want to say this. We in this country, and this country is a part of the globe, which is, of course, what I refer to as Mother Earth. So we, North American continent of Mother Earth, need to understand that our environment is being absolutely pillaged and destroyed. Destroyed by the corporate-controlled U.S. government and corporations such as Monsanto, GE, etc., etc. We must stop this. Because what it is doing in destroying the planet of Mother Earth, of course, these companies say they're not, but obviously they are. Science says they are. Reality says they are. Anyway, when we destroy our planet of Mother Earth, sisters and brothers, what we're doing is destroying ourselves and destroying the planet for future generations. Can we honestly look at ourselves in the mirror and say that's okay, that our children or children's children and children's children's children will not be able to benefit from a decent environmental life on the planet Earth, of this Mother Earth? Come on. We have got to understand that this is very, very, very serious. So that was the second point I wanted to cover. I hope all of us are thinking and saying, let me look at what I can do. And I turns into me, which turns into we, collective, all of us, we, W-E. What can we do together to change this filthy, corrupt, rotten system? And you know what? We can do it, but we got to do it together, each in our own way. As Gil Scott-Heron would say, each one reach one. Okay? Each one teach one. That's what this struggle is all about. Today and tomorrow. And even past that, each one, reach one, each one, teach one. all power to the people, my brothers and sisters. I'm going to get off this line right now. I want to thank
Larry, before you disappear, I would like to ask you, recently there's been a prison strike, and one of our earlier guests was telling us a little bit about it, and I'm wondering, I know that you had to face the challenge of prison at one point, from the Black Panther times, and I wonder if were there any actions like that that you participated in?
Yes, there were indeed. Of course, I myself went on a prolonged hunger strike because of the rotten conditions in the prison that I was in. But yes, there were indeed actions even beyond that that I participated in the 70s and 80s, et cetera, et cetera. The prison, how can I put this gingerly? Or I'm not going to try to be ginger. The point is that what is happening is that prisoners around the country are saying, you know what, this is slavery. I don't care if it's black, white, brown, red, yellow. This is slavery. What we are being treated as is we're being treated as slaves. And our labor is being taken, stolen from us. We are getting 2 cents on the dollar, if that, and we will not tolerate it anymore, not to mention the horrible condition in these U.S. gulags. So, yes, I'm very much cognizant or aware of what is happening today. And, yes, even back in the day, prisoners did stand up and fight for our rights. But today in the year 2016, it's imperative that we make that struggle a part of the overall struggle, if that makes any sense.
It certainly does, and I hope that we can all, you know, those of us who are on the outside can unite with those who are on the inside and fighting this prison industrial complex and the horrible slave labor system that it represents.
Absolutely. And that's really, you summed it up, because that's what it is. It is a slave labor situation, and, you know, we must not tolerate this. We cannot. Those of us on the outside, I'm so glad you put it that way. And, you know, ironically, we're on the outside. We're just in a larger prison. We're all in prison, but we're in a larger prison. The brothers and sisters on the, quote, inside are in a smaller, more confined, more desperate prison. But we're all in this, and we must fight it together. And, again, as we said back in the day, my brother, and I say it today, the year 2016, proudly, all power to the people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. All power to the people.
Well, thank you once again for joining us, Larry, and we look forward to hearing from you each month, and we'll look forward to next month.
Thank you. It's an honor and a pleasure. Take care. Stay strong.
Coming up in our next segment, we will have news from Moon Rock Lake. We will also have letters that we've been receiving during the first half of our show. And that's it.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message. Is your data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank, or all the banks for that matter. Are your banking records safe in your hands? So when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say, hey, look, this is what I had. You have it. I want it back. Is your personal data safe? Family records, addresses, phone numbers? We'll squeeze on over to freedomslips.com. Yes, that's www.freedomslips.com. Click the banner on the homepage for the EMP-proof bullet drive to get the full scoop of everything that we offer. So, folks, keep your data safe for your peace of mind. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. Opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now, a letter in a Boone's Farm bottle. Some notes we have been receiving during the first half of our show from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telepathy, and telegraph. From some recently found emails from Colin Powell to Bill Clinton, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Karl Rove, George Soros, and Rudy Giuliani, we hear, false flags are as American as apple pie, you bleeping bleepers. Nazi General Franz Halder testified at the Nuremberg trials that Nazi leader Hermann Göring admitted to setting fire to the German Parliament building in 1933 and then falsely blaming the communists for the arson. As admitted by the U.S. government, recently declassified documents show that in 1962, the American Joint Chiefs of Staff signed off on a plan to blow up American airplanes, using an elaborate plan involving the switching of airplanes, and also to commit terrorist acts on American soil, and then to blame it on the Cubans in order to justify an invasion of Cuba. A U.S. congressional committee admitted that, as part of its COINTELPRO campaign, the FBI had used many provocateurs in the 1950s through 1970s to carry out violent acts and falsely blame them on political activists. A Mossad agent admits that in 1984, Mossad planted a radio transmitter in Gaddafi's compound in Tripoli, Libya, which broadcast fake terrorist transmissions recorded by Mossad in order to frame Gaddafi as a terrorist supporter. Ronald Reagan bombed Libya immediately thereafter. The United States Army's 1994 publication, Special Forces Foreign Internal Defense Tactics, Techniques, and Procedures for Special Forces, updated in 2004, recommends employing terrorists and using false flag operations to destabilize leftist regimes in Latin America. False flag terrorist attacks were carried out in Latin America and other regions as part of the CIA's dirty wars. Similarly, a CIA psychological operations manual prepared by a CIA contractor for the Nicaraguan Contra rebels noted the value of assassinating someone on your own side to create a martyr for the cause. The manual, was authenticated by the U.S. government. The U.S. falsely blamed Iraq for playing a role in the 9/11 attacks, as shown by a memo from the Defense Secretary, as one of the main justifications for launching the Iraq War. Even after the 9/11 Commission admitted that there was no connection, Dick Cheney said that the evidence is overwhelming that al-Qaeda had a relationship with Saddam Hussein's regime, that Cheney probably had information unavailable to the commission, and that the media was not doing their homework in reporting such ties. Top U.S. government officials now admit that the Iraq War was really launched for oil, not 9/11 or weapons of mass destruction. In 2005, Professor John Arkela of the Naval Postgraduate School, a renowned U.S. defense analyst credited with developing the concept of net war, called for Western intelligence services to create new pseudo-gang terrorist groups. The new rules will enable the special forces community to set up what it calls action teams in the target countries overseas, which can be used to find and eliminate terrorist organizations. Do you remember the right-wing execution squads in El Salvador? The former high-level intelligence official asked me, referring to the military-led gangs that committed atrocities in the early 1980s. We founded them and we financed them, he said. In 2005, British soldiers dressed as Arabs were caught by Iraqi police after a shootout against the police. The soldiers apparently possessed explosives and were accused of attempting to set off bombs. Undercover Israeli soldiers admitted in 2005 to throwing stones at other Israeli soldiers so they could blame it on Palestinians as an excuse to crack down on peaceful protests by the Palestinians. The Ukrainian security chief admits that the sniper attacks which started the Ukrainian coup were carried out in order to frame others. Ukrainian officials admit that the Ukrainian snipers fired on both sides to create maximum chaos. Israeli police were again filmed in 2015, dressing up as Arabs and throwing stones, then turning over Palestinian protesters to Israeli soldiers. Britain's spy agency has admitted that it carries out digital false flag attacks on targets, framing people by writing offensive or unlawful material and blaming it on the target. U.S. soldiers have admitted that if they kill innocent Iraqis and Afghanis, they then drop automatic weapons near the body so they can pretend they were militants. Similarly, police frame innocent people for crimes they didn't commit. The practice is so well known that the New York Times noted in 1981, in police jargon, a throwdown is a weapon planted on a victim. A former U.S. intelligence officer recently alleged most terrorists are false flag terrorists or are created by our own security services. The head and special agent in charge of the FBI's Los Angeles office said that most terror attacks are committed by the CIA and FBI's false flags. Similarly, the director of the National Security Agency under Ronald Reagan, Lieutenant General William Odom, said, by any measure, the U.S. has long used terrorism. In 78-79, the Senate was trying to pass a law against international terrorism. In every version they produced, the lawyers said that the U.S. would be in violation. Provocation is one of the most basic but confounding aspects of warfare. Despite its sometimes obvious use, it has succeeded consistently against audiences around the world for millennia to compel war. A well-constructed provocation narrative mutes even the most vocal opposition. The persistent use of strategic provocation over centuries and its apparent importance to war planners begs the question of its likely use by the U.S. and other states in the near term. The NSA admits that it lied about what really happened in the Gulf of Tonkin incident in 1964, manipulating data to make it look like North Vietnamese boats fired on a U.S. ship so as to create a false justification for the Vietnam War. One of the central lies used to justify the 91 Gulf War against Iraq after Iraq invaded Kuwait was the false statement by a young Kuwaiti girl that Iraqis murdered Kuwaiti babies in hospitals. Her statement was arranged by a congressman who knew that she was actually the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador to the U.S., who was desperately trying to lobby the U.S. to enter the war, but the congressman hid that fact from the public and from Congress. The entire torture program was geared towards obtaining false confessions linking Iraq and 9/11. CIA agents and documents admit that the agency gave Iran plans for building nuclear weapons so it could frame Iran for trying to build the bomb. The humanitarian wars in Syria, Libya, and Yugoslavia were all justified by exaggerated reports that the leaders of those countries were committing atrocities against their people.
A letter in a Boone's Farm bottle. Some notes we've been receiving during the first half of our show from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telepathy, and telegraph. It's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. The local radio station in Moonrock Lake is WKRZ. The station has been in the Marconi family for over 70 years. Each Sunday night at 10 p.m., they always had their old-time radio hour with Bud Abbott, Gracie Allen, Jack Benny, Groucho Marx, Lucille Ball. Now these years, they have a new modern Sunday night show. So now, stay tuned, sit back and relax, and join us for another episode of The Adventures of John Brick, retired teacher. Sponsored by Big Yellow Earplugs. When you've had enough, we're going to be there for you. Big Yellow Earplugs. One size is all you're going to need. People began to gather. Almost parade time. A faint scraping of lightweight folding chairs on the sidewalk whined and growled out from the neighborhoods, growing louder, pressing from all directions. The children heard it. Officer Rock heard it. The children pinched their hands against their ears. Officer Rock stood, followed by the children. The scraping grew louder and louder. Then they saw them, the people. From all directions they slumped, wearing all manners of clothing, mostly loose-fitting and colorful hats, ball caps, straw hats. Like cave dwellers with their clubs, they dragged their yellow and orange and green folding chairs along the sidewalk, through the street, down the steps toward the main street. They wore tennis shoes and sandals, work boots, army boots, camo boots, blaze orange boots. Came in bare feet. Came with canes, with walkers, propelling wheelchairs. They did not talk, but headed straight to their spot on the curb next to the street. The screeching of the scraping stopped, and they sat as one. They stared stone-faced across the street or looked to the right or the left. They checked their watches and put paper plates to their brows, listening for the swoosh, swoosh. Officer Rock patted the head of one of the children as they moved on across the street. Down. Swoosh, swoosh. The brittle swoosh, swoosh of the street scrubbers. Officer Rock spotted the barber, the mechanic, the postal worker, the dentist, in a huddle over something. He walked up. There they came. Officer Rock nodded as he sidled up next to the group on the walk. They all watched the street scrubbers go by, past with their big long brooms and elbow grease, really getting into the corner to erase any possible sin. Next came the apple pie float, followed by the Chevy dealership float, the baseball float, and then the mom float, family dinner float, job float, the Mount Rushmore float, the Ant World Mission float, and the yellow ribbon float. While the floats inched past, the people in the metal folding chairs waved their flags on little sticks with the pointed ends for eating weenies. Officer Rock waved and nodded to the people, sometimes pausing by a yellow or green or orange folding chair to squat and visit. Officer Rock smiled. There he was. Faded orange chair, the metal tube legs all bent and rusty. He walked over the lumpy grass around an anthill and leaned low to sneak up. Hey! Officer Rock grabbed both shoulders of the big man in the red ball cap and red shorts and deep blue t-shirt, white tennis shoes. Man looked back over his shoulder, one hand clutching Officer Rock's wrist. Smiled. You all, he growled. So-and-so, they both said together. Officer Rock knelt on one knee to talk to his old high school history teacher, Mr. Brick. Don Brick, room 207, seventh period, the last of the day. Mr. Brick smelled like onions and grease, whiskey, beer, an old barbershop, wood shavings, guns, newspaper print, black leather boots, the hardware store, black boot polish, and engine oil. His white socks were stretched to his knees, and he wiggled his toes out the end of his sandals. Officer Rock sat on the curb facing the parade. So, you're a cop, said Mr. John Brick. His voice was deep and cracked as the Grand Canyon. Officer Rock saw John Brick right here almost every week. He knew he was a cop. Yep, guess you're right. Getting about that time for the high school bands, the National Guard trucks and tanks, the tractors, and then the horses. People were putting their hands on the arms of their chairs and begin to push off to stand. In the commotion, Brick leaned over in the direction of Officer Rock. What do you think about the journalist? That Randy, huh? Officer Rock watched the parade out of one eye. Something doesn't add up, he said. Brick nodded and stood for the passing flags, placing his cap over his cigarette pack. There's a lot that smells fishy, I'd say. Brick growled and then bent low to cough as the air was filled with incoming candy from the boys in the National Guard Humvee. The big gap caused by something not going right, so everyone sat down. John Brick let his own chair sit empty to sit on the curb with Officer Rock. Started to tell him, and then he was interrupted by a clown with a flower lapel that shot water, and they all laughed while wiping their faces and clothes. Brick again began to tell Officer Rock about how he didn't have much to do these days, and so he sat down one day and tried to write. No, I used to read, Brick said. What for? Said Officer Rock. Lots of people have blogs, added Brick. I want a dog, said Officer Rock. A blog, said John Brick. But I don't have a blog. I just said blog. You got a blog? A blog? What's a blog? No, I don't really blog. I like on a computer, said John Brick. I just write, you know, these little notes and pass them to my friends at coffee, and they pass their notes to me, and we read them because we can't really say these things, you know, out loud. Well, said Officer Rock as he stared down at the shadows threatening to engulf the street. This is something new. One put paper plates and frisbees and hands to their brows to look up into the sky. Yeah, we heard something about this. John Brick's long growl rumbled along like a subway train under the street. He looked right into the sun without a paper plate to his brow and locked eyes with the giant, big, bad wolf balloon. Paper said something about this, said Brick. takes 50 volunteers to hold them, he whispered. The inflation takes a full day. The helium is brought in by ships and trains. The very first balloon in New York City was... The Hun, said Rock. Yeah, said Brick. It's very interesting, said Officer Rock, as they both continued to watch the sky become engulfed with bumping balloons and ropes and birds diving in to investigate. The Grinch, the Wicked Witch of the West, Cruella de Vil, Big Brother, Big Sister, the Queen of Hearts, Adolf Hitler, Voldemort, Inspector Javert, Dracula, Joker, Robespierre, Emmanuel Goldstein. The enormous balloons bumped each other as they inched forward and looming, casting darkness over the town. Came the lone nut balloon, bigger, jumping, bucking, snorting with dozens of ropes. People stood and picked up their chairs, held in place by the ring of clowns behind them, nodding at them to remain seated. Round the corner, down by the park and the pool, came more balloons, an army of lone nuts, lost, confused, wandering into the field, down the road, guided by the men with the ropes, back down the street. The clowns busily took pictures of everyone from behind, then jumped back into the street to smile and wave, jump around, spray water from their lapels, and then the people were able to run, picking up their chairs. The sound of the dragging, scraping aluminum on the cement wind up and down the streets. And then around the corner, down by the entrance to the park and the pool, came the horses, the horse clubs, the little kids riding the little ponies, and the older folks with the big horses. The horse hooves echoed down the main street canyon like musket fire aimed at stragglers over an abandoned Civil War battlefield. The cowboys and cowgirls hunched and held one hand on the saddle horn and tipped their caps to each other as they always did because everyone else had fled. Cowboy wearing big chaps and a diamond stud shirt stopped to visit with the children still seated on the corner. He leaned over from the big yellow horse. You better get on home now. There'll be another parade tomorrow. Go on now, little partners, get! So everyone either went home or to the cafe. John Brick sat at his regular table in the cafe, his balloon tied to his wrist, squeaking as it rubbed the ceiling, egged on by the ceiling fan on low speed. The jingle jangled. All eyes turned, shot toward the door like little dog magnets at the bell. The customers at the tables in the booths and at the counter fell to their knees and bent their foreheads to the floor as a flag pushed into the cafe. Six large young men in uniform formed two lines, clicked their heels, pushed out their chests as they saluted. Boots tapped on the tile. From the end of the two lines emerged a small man smoking a pipe in military uniform, wearing sunglasses. The top of his head came to the shoulders of the young men in line. He stuck his chin into the air as he puffed on the pipe, his cap cocked to the side. He carried a riding crop in his crisp olive pants. They were tucked inside shine black boots that came to his knees. The iron boot heels of the military veteran clicked as he made his way to John Brick's table. Parked in silence, watching the men passing back and forth bits of paper, he stared at John Brick and his balloon with the red lettering that said, "Something doesn't add up." He looked up and stalked around the table one full circle to read the balloon. The military veteran walked around the table to address all the customers at once. "To honor America, please remove your hats." "Thank you for your service," the people mumbled together, leaping from their seats, pressing their foreheads flush with the tile floor, tossing their caps, bonnets, hats at the feet of the military veteran. "To honor the flag," he said, "please remove your shoes. Thank you for our freedom." A pile of shoes, boots, tennis shoes bounced at his feet. He continued until all the people, the customers, the cook, the waitresses, knelt on the floor naked. The military veteran then turned around. He stared hard, surprised perhaps at seeing John Brick, fully clothed, still sitting, sipping his coffee, holding on to the balloon, and the other men visiting as they had been, passing notes, drinking coffee from thick white mugs. The military veteran, matching eyes with John Brick, turned toward the jingle door, bent forward as one of the honor guard unbuckled his pants and guided them solemnly around his knees to the floor. The honor guard tossed the clothes at the people. They were instructed to put them on, no matter if they got the right ones or not, just put them on. One by one, some men wearing high heels, some ladies shuffling along in overalls and big work boots. They were guided past the military veteran, and each one leaned over to kiss his behind on the way out. When it was time for the table to file past the military veteran, the honor guard surrounded the table and nodded toward the military veteran behind, sticking in the door, in the air over by the door, turning red, perhaps getting cold, some little hairs. The honor guard soldiers at attention continued nodding toward the behind as John Brick drank his coffee, held his balloon, and the others continued their coffee chit-chat, passing notes between them across the table, side to side. Beep, beep. The clown skidded to a stop on the curb, hollered to everyone milling around that the parade was about to start again. Beep, beep. He zipped away. The military veteran stood, his pants at his ankles, the red on his behind spreading like a rash. He edged out to the walk, accompanied by the honor guard. He headed down the sidewalk, still staring at John Brick and his group, who did not seem to even see the military veteran and his entourage, still chatting, sipping coffee, passing notes back and forth to each other. The military veteran stormed off toward the staging ground, stopping now and again for citizens to kneel on the sidewalk to kiss the behind. The honor guard followed along in front on the sides, bringing up the rear, taking turns cleaning the behind with a handy wipe. And that's the news from Moonrock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another New American Dream radio show. We thank you for joining us. And thank you, Mike, and good night.
Thank you, Chuck. Great job. Thanks to our guests, Frank, Phil, Azura, MK, and Larry.
Radio.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We gotta stop them. They're gonna kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, by all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener.